This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Ring the bell. We've done it again. Golden Oak Lending has lowered rates to 4.875 fixed. Lower your monthly payment, get cash out, pay off credit cards, and best of all, make no mortgage payments for 2 months. Lock in this incredible 4.875 rate and get your cash in as little as 14 days. Visit goldenoaklending.com today.
Golden Oak Lending cured my blues.
5.81 APR, FHA, 15-year, 20% equity qualified credit. Additional terms apply. NMLS 114937.
At T-Mobile, we'll give you 4 free 5G phones and 4 lines for only $25 per line per month with eligible trade-ins. And no, it's not a contest. It's every day for a limited time. Everyone's a winner on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay. Up to $830 off each phone via 24 monthly bill credits plus taxes, fees, and $10 device connection charge. For well-qualified customers, contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credits stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history podcast created by me, Professor Greg Jackson. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Shota Imanaga. This is the second game in a row where he leaves the game, only this time it didn't seem like a cramp.
He's never had any lower body, muscle strains, and so he's a little unsure of, what the feeling means. But he felt something for sure.
Thank he's you. A little doughy.
A cheeseburger kid.
And I think that is, you wonder about his conditioning, perhaps.
They need to know the time frame of Shota.
Depends on the severity of the injury.
Exactly.
So once Shota is done showering and singing.
No, God, no.
He'll get his imaging and he will figure out how bad that hamstring has been strained.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Hey, Chicago. What do you say?
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. God, we are exhausted this morning, the both of us. It's just going to be a rough one, and we should just tell everyone we were at the Met Gala last night. I mean, fine folks at Flag and Anthem supply the clothes, and we dress up. That's
good morning, Mully.
Works.
Oh, happy Tuesday.
How are you holding up?
It's going to be a long Tuesday.
Wow. We were really showing it off yesterday.
Red carpet. That was rough. But if we were ever to go to the Met Gala, if for real, then we would be well-dressed because we would have Flag and Anthem taking care of us, and we would be striking a pose. However one would strike a pose.
I love the idea that we went to New York, got on the red carpet, and then got back here for the show.
It's conceivable.
Sure.
It's conceivable.
We just drove through the night.
No, wouldn't be driving. Oh. We could have a private jet.
Oh, well, hold on a second.
The Odyssey jet.
The Odyssey jet picked us up in New
York. Yeah, I'm sure. Good cause like that.
Oh.
We could miss work. Heck.
This is one of my favorite shirts from Flag and Anthem.
It's very comfortable, isn't it?
Oh, my God. It's one.
Mine's very similarly blue, but not the same design, but it's just as comfortable.
Oh, these are so comfortable.
Why wouldn't we go to the Met Gala? We could skip work for that. Angel Reese did.
Yeah. She skipped work for that, too.
All right. Also, Breonna Stewart did, too.
Okay.
Just saying.
Who else?
Sabrina Escu or something like that. I think she skipped, too, for the – she was at the Met Gala. I saw a couple of WNBA players.
I did not know that Angel Reese was on the board. Did you see that? She's, like, on the board of the Met Gala.
I did not realize that.
I didn't either. Maybe I made it up. Maybe I misread it. I get confused. I'll admit it.
Brandon from the back.
Brandon from the top row.
Yeah, just defending.
Don't be making fun of Angel for going to the Met Gala.
Yes.
You know what it is?
I saw your question. I saw a question before.
Yes.
Yeah. So
I think it is an interesting dynamic because she did skip practice. And if it were Caleb Williams doing the same thing in August for a fashion event, we would be grilling him mercilessly.
Yeah, but
endlessly.
He's a more accurate shooter.
Wow. That's a shot.
It's not. All love. Met Gala fires me up.
Let's get her some more NBA MVP votes.
The Cubs, man. The Cubs are just this entity. The Cubs, unbelievable again last night. That is the seventh straight home series where they have won the opening game.
It's not unbelievable. Fantastic. It's expected.
Well, it is expected.
This is the way the best offense in baseball should behave when you're playing against a pitcher who pretty good, but you should take care of that guy. And they did. Rupert.
He was taken care of. I got to tell you, like, it was almost – you're watching a team in San Francisco that – it was like they got rattled.
It's a good team.
Oh my
though.
God! There's Pete Crow Armstrong. But
it's a good team.
But the Cubs are running the bases and they're kicking the ball all over the infield. That was crazy.
Well, it was an uncharacteristically sloppy night for the Giants.
Wow, was it a sloppy?
Yeah,
night.
It was really sloppy. When Matt Chapman, the PCA play, the little squibber, he didn't handle that, and it had a little bit of English on it, if you will. But that's the play he typically makes.
Right.
And Adamas usually makes a play that he didn't make at shortstop. It was very uncharacteristic jitter, not jitters, but they're usually more sure-handed than that.
Yeah.
And they weren't. But the Cubs, with their speed and with their power, they put pressure on defense.
Yeah, they do.
They do.
Yep. It was a hell of a win last night. And another really good performance from Matthew Boyd.
That's becoming
the
norm.
All the way around, it was an
that was a professional victory. The offense delivered.
Yep, no
doubt. The starting pitching was good enough, and the bullpen protected. That's a very good victory for the Cubs, and that's what we should expect and get used to. So I don't think we should be surprised. The Cubs 22-14, and it's a very good baseball team. They have some issues. They're dealing with it, and they're in first place.
Dansby Swanson was hitting the ball last night and running and scoring. They had a lot of contributions where you're kind of like, wow, this team is really loaded. They are a good baseball team. And you felt good about the news, as Dustin keeps repeating, the mild part of the hamstring strain.
Yeah, okay. Well, there are two things you said there. Number one, you feel very good about Dansby Swanson batting eighth. The length of that lineup is a strength of it.
Yep.
And offensively, when he is on this seven-game hitting streak and he's on a tear, that's what he should be doing on a more regular basis. And if he can do that batting eighth, this is going to be a fun season, and it already has been. Now, the news about Shota Imanaga that people seem to be celebrating is – good, I guess. What if we were expecting a torn hamstring? I guess it's good in relation to that. But a mild hamstring injury and at least 2 weeks off, I suppose it's good news. It's encouraging, but we don't know how he's going to recover from this.
The skipper called it good news.
He said it was. They were optimistic.
The skipper said that it was like. What did the skipper say, Dustin? You played the cut. He said it was good news.
That's good news, right?
Yes.
They're going to operate
that's
under caution.
That's not me.
Don't say
that's
operate.
Not Dustin. That's the skipper.
Don't say operate.
The MRI showed he's got a hamstring strain. He's presenting to the doctor like with a very mild hamstring strain. So, you know, that makes us optimistic. I think it's likely we're going to be – I think it's probable we're going to be past 2 weeks here because we're going to be cautious and make sure that he's back to 100%. But all in all, pretty good news.
Pretty good news.
Pretty good news.
I just feel like, I mean, I don't want to get Tuesday off on a bad note, but I feel like you're like unhappy that it's just mild.
Oh, no, I'm not.
Okay, but
why,
I mean,
David, why are you so angry?
Why would I be upset that it's
you're like,
mild?
You're like, have you ever had a hamstring injury? It's mild. Like, because, like, yesterday, like, you wanted to be right with your diagnosis from the booth or something. Like,
oh,
I mean,
look at
come on.
See, now you're going on. Now you're going a little far. All right. You're going a little far.
But it's this is good news. This is like hitting an exacta. Like, we all knew that it wasn't what it was in Pittsburgh. It wasn't cramping. But there was a fear that it could be surgical. There was.
No, I never.
I didn't say you did.
Yeah,
I said, David Haw said. Nobody
well, you said,
said
I wanted to be right yesterday. And yesterday I thought that it was going to be something that would keep him out for up to a month.
I guess I want to celebrate. Still I was could. So happy. They beat another very good team yes. soundly last
yeah.
night.
Yeah.
We saw great defense from a third baseman last night.
Yeah.
And the news on showed us pretty good, all things
pretty
considered.
Pretty good news.
He could still be out a month.
Let me tell you something. There are two subjects we can't talk about, and we try to dance around it, but no commenting at all on Angel Reese or the Met Gala, and you stay away from Shota.
I guess.
That's what we've learned in the first 10 minutes of our show this morning.
I don't think that I've – I think that's an unfair thing. I don't think that I've made arguments based on my need to be right. So that's first. But I think
all right,
that
I apologize.
When Shota, as far as Shota is concerned, I do think that it is encouraging because he doesn't, it's not more severe than maybe people feared. But I also think that it remains true when you have somebody who's never had a hamstring injury before, the recovery time can be tricky. It can be hard to project. So I think what we tend to do in sports towns like this, like ours, great passionate sports fans, but we hear pretty encouraging, we hear optimistic, and all of a sudden in our heads we pencil in, okay, it's May 6th, May 20th he'll be back. That's unrealistic.
No, what the guy said, if you listen to what Craig Counsell is saying, he's saying he's going to miss three starts minimum, right? Because he's saying
I think the Cubs were afraid that it was going to be worse.
Oh, I think,
and the reaction to the being optimistic was a reflection of that.
A sigh of relief.
Yes, and I think everybody should be somewhat relieved because this doesn't seem like it's going to be something that's going to linger till the All-Star break.
Exactly,
he's coming back.
Yes,
and they're going to deal with his absence as they deal with his absence. They have not concluded yet what they're going to do. But I think everyone can feel somewhat relieved that this wasn't something that was going to be 6 to 8 weeks.
Yes.
2 months,
that's
which
exactly
was feared.
Right. Yeah.
So there's a big difference in terms of how much time he misses.
It could easily be a month. Because here's the thing. You could miss three starts, and then you might, who knows? You might want to, well, maybe he should throw on the side, maybe. Who knows?
If it were Justin Steele, hypothetically, and he was somebody who had this injury before and he came back from, I think you'd be easier to project. We have somebody in Shota Imanaga who just hasn't had this injury history, so he hasn't had the injury rehab. He also could be a fast healer.
Yeah, we don't know.
Conceivably. So we just, these things are tricky. Everybody's body will be wired differently, and his, I just determined this last night. Until he's back, they can stop showing that commercial because
wow.
It makes you want to laugh, and then you remember he's gone.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, he is of vital importance, so I like the idea that they're going to be careful with it. And I also like the idea. What the news was yesterday, he has an injury. Yeah, he's got to deal with a hamstring, but he's coming back, and he's coming back sooner rather than later. And you're right. It could easily be a month. But he's still coming back, and that's really what counts.
Now, what they do in the interim is interesting. We can continue to discuss.
Yeah.
They have not concluded yet that Cade Horton won't be the answer. I think they have bought themselves some time by bringing up Hollowell, and it's smart. He pitched last night. It wasn't a high-leverage situation, and you can get a young bullpen arm some quality appearances.
Listen, we talked about it yesterday. The guy pitched yesterday, talking about Cade Horton. So you're not bringing him up. What would the point be?
He pitched Saturday.
Well, but what's the point of bringing him up if the start is on Friday?
You don't have to bring him up.
We're talking about.
That's what I mean.
Next Saturday, excuse me.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to bring him up at all. You get a bullpen arm, and you get a guy that has options in Hollowell, and then you can make a decision later in the week as to how you're going to fill that role of Shohei.
Once again, though, I think when you have Jed Hoyer facing every question, he knew what the topic was going to be. He doesn't shy away from it, and he was very candid about.
Did he kind of shoot it down, though? He kind of shot down the idea of bringing up Horton more than I thought he would. Let's listen.
The hesitancy is a no, I would say, you know, just trying to make sure it's the right time. I think that it's easier to work on things in the minors and sort of, and you know, he didn't pitch a lot last year. I think had he pitched all last season, you know, he may well have debuted by now, but if he hadn't debuted, I think that we would, you know, you have a better sense of where he is. Whereas, like, you know, because he missed a lot of time last year, I think that it's been good to give him a foundation in Iowa. I'd say that.
I think if you listen between the lines almost, what the guy is saying is we want to set up his debut as him starting in Major League Baseball, not as him replacing Shota. And there might be a lot of when is the game is in –
It's in New York. Yeah, they play the Mets.
Yeah, and you might not want to debut them in New York
maybe.
Against the Mets.
Council said the same, similar, addressed a similar topic, and he said he had not made a decision yet on Saturday.
Right.
So that kind of left the door open. And I do wonder if they're on the same page, you know, because you could look at that being an organizational decision, wanting to be patient. And I could understand the manager wanting to get a guy that's looking
he's
as good as
pitch.
He's looking.
Pitch.
Ready to help the major league team.
Right.
Whether it's in New York or next week against the Marlins at home, you have an opportunity here over the next 2 to 4 weeks. Can I say that? Is that okay? Over the next 2 to 4 weeks, having a void in your rotation trying to fill
you're it. Absolutely right. It sounded like he's definitely going to be out for two starts, and it sounded like maybe a third.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows? I agree with you. I don't think anyone is disagreeing about that. It'll be very interesting to see if they want to start him in New York or if they want to start him at home, if that matters to them at all, if it matters to the kid. I don't know.
I don't think it should matter in May. I don't think it should matter. You're going to be in a high-leverage situation soon enough. And I do tend to think we look at this thing. Look, okay, Cade Horton, for example. He's a first-round draft pick who was seventh overall.
Yes.
He's been in the spotlight before. You realize I know it's a different sport, and I know it's all kind of different circumstances. He's 3 months older than Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not a newbie coming into a situation. He will be a rookie, but he's not like he's an immature young professional. He should be seasoned enough and mature enough to handle the moment, however big it seems, especially in May, whether it's in New York or at home against the Marlins. He should not be overwhelmed.
I'm not arguing that at all. I think I'm curious who's got more coin. I mean, you know, Caleb made $10 million before he showed up. That's pretty good.
Cade Horton? What was his bonus?
I'm asking. I think Cade's got more dough. What's Cade's record as a starter for the Bears? They didn't. That didn't work out as spectacularly.
Wrong Cade.
What did I say? Oh, I'm sorry. What is Caleb Williams' record as starter?
I thought you were going
Bears.
Back to your Cade days.
No.
All right. No, Caleb starter with the Bear record with the Bears as a starter probably not equal to what Cade Horton is as a starting pitcher for.
That's all.
The Iowa Cubs.
It's all different, but I'm just having fun. What is it?
Cade Horton's signing bonus is $4.45 million.
Oh man, so
he's not even in the same.
That's like a quarterly earnings for Caleb Williams.
He couldn't move into Caleb Williams' neighborhood.
But I think ideally he will be around the Chicago sports scene as long as Caleb Williams will be.
Oh, no question. And there are
if things go according to plan.
There are hundreds of millions of dollars in his future.
One would hope.
One would think. Starting pitchers.
One would hope that's in Chicago.
That's a big coin. Yeah.
You think the Yankees are going to give Cade Horton that contract in 5 years?
If the Cubs won't, it's very possible.
let's hope that's a problem. Let's have him debut first.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, you don't even have to debut that much. I mean, look at the contract Crochet got. He got paid really before he's proven.
Yeah, that's true. Garrett Crochet, that's an excellent point. Garrett Crochet, also a guy who first-round draft pick.
Yeah.
His ascension to the majors was much quicker. Cade Horton was drafted 3 years ago. So it seems like he has been a prospect for a while. That's why I do think that, you know, Jed Hoyer's...
You're ready for him.
Jed Hoyer's patience level, and he did sound very patient.
Yes, he did.
Is commendable. I do wonder how those conversations go internally, because I wonder how much patience does exist in that building for waiting for Cade Horton to arrive. I mean, he looks pretty good.
He does. And you really could use him. I mean, yeah. Look at the, you know, they've done well in terms of covering for the loss of Justin Steele, but we've always imagined that they've got to be aware that they're going to need an upgrade.
And right now, though, Jameson Taillon's the ace of your staff.
Yeah, Jameson Taillon's having a great year. He's having the kind of year that they gave him that contract.
How long does that last?
Well, I think it lasts this year. I think he's on the right track. He's having a great year. I don't think he's headed to any kind of disaster. I think I really enjoy the professionalism, the way he talks about it. He's a calming influence for
He's a great mentor.
No question.
He's a terrific, yes, positive influence in the entire clubhouse, especially for young pitching staff. And I have all kinds of time for Jameson Taillon. I just think if you're the Cubs and you look at, you didn't really project this season,
right,
to be in a situation where he is your ace.
But you never projected to be without both Steele and Shota at the same time, right?
Javier Assad.
And you know, the thing is,
when you projected this season, if you did such a thing, when they reported to Mesa, you expected Steele, you expected Shota, and you expected Assad to be in that rotation.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure that you were looking at Colin Ray and Matthew Boyd. You thought you might be able to get cover for whatever could happen, but you didn't really think they'd be starting.
No, did you? Yeah. Matthew Boyd very good last night.
He was excellent.
Gave up that home run that was hit to the moon.
He gave up one bad homer. That was it.
You're entitled to that.
Yeah, it's all right.
If you're a lefty.
And the Cubs came right back, scored a couple more runs, and then they blew the whole thing up in the kick-around inning.
The opposing home run no longer feels like a demoralizing thing. It no longer feels like, oh, my gosh, they can't overcome this.
It felt like a fluke, frankly. And then because of the way they came back, and then the idea that the Giants, what was it in that inning? They had three walks and, like, two errors. Like, right? I mean, I don't know how you survive that in baseball when you're just giving up outs and letting people run the bases. They batted around in that inning.
They did. And that was what you're getting used to, actually.
Yeah.
So that becomes the norm. And they obviously.
Even Nicky Lopez walked, right?
That was a big walk. Bases loaded. It was a good at bat. It was a good at bat for Nicky Lopez. He had a good night.
He did.
I don't know that you feel any better or much better about the third base situation.
Well, you know, you feel he can cover that base. That's how you feel. He's not there for his bat. You don't feel when he gets a hit, it's almost a surprise. He got a nice hit.
Is he a placeholder?
Like there was a really awkward moment there where I believe in the booth. Yes. JD and Alex were going back. I don't know what's going on with Boog. He wasn't there.
Not sure.
But that was like.
I think he's ill. He's fallen ill.
He wanted a grand slam from Nicky.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
Who wanted a grand slam from Nicky? I had Alex, the sound down. I was listening to the radio at times.
No, it was just weird. He was like, and JD's like, well, I'd be on board with that. And then he says something like, well, he's got 7 career homers on 2,000 plate appearances. I mean, it was like the number, like when he said it, I was like, what are you smoking? I mean, there was no way.
And that was JD's response.
It was similar. He was like, yeah, okay, I'm on board. But then he kind of mentioned, well, he's had this handful of home runs over whatever 1,000 plate appearances he's had in Major League Baseball. Like, you cannot anticipate this is the guy to hit the grand slam.
So every fan, when Nicky Lopez goes to the plate with the bases loaded, probably thinks, boy, wouldn't be cool if he hit a grand slam.
No, I think you think,
but
boy, wouldn't it be great if he could walk? He's Nicky Lopez, for God's sake.
I know. I suppose that's what I would think, just get a hit.
Exactly. And it was just a strange exchange because he was hoping for the grand slam, but he was hoping for it from the wrong guy.
Why don't you listen to the score? Why don't you listen to Pat and Ron?
Because I was sitting on my couch and I was clicking back and forth.
Just ask it.
I was watching tell you what I was watching. I was watching the Cubs, the White Sox, and the basketball.
The Met Gala?
And I had the Met Gala in my mind.
Yes, I know. We were there mentally.
Yeah.
We transported ourselves.
Yes, exactly.
There in spirit, if you will. I wore a tux on the couch. I had a black tie affair in my living room.
I once went to a wedding that was like a black tie affair, and then the Oscars were on, so I had the tuxedo. So my wife and I dressed up. She had a dress on, and I wore a tuxedo, and we were sitting there watching the Oscars as if we were at the Oscars. And my landlord came up, and he was like, "Whoa, what happened? What happened, guys? Did you get engaged?" This was before we had gotten engaged.
Wow.
And I was like, no,
you know, that's
like, it was awkward.
That's a sweet memory, though, yeah, on a special yes. day.
Today happy, is happy my anniversary. Today yep. is 25 years of Wedded Bliss.
Yep.
And I honest to God, I thought about it this morning when I got up. I just thought, I'm one of the luckier people you're ever going to meet. I really am very fortunate and very happy in my life, and I feel blessed this morning.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you, buddy.
It's a good way to start the day.
Yes.
And we're not even that tired from being in New York all night.
No, we didn't go to the Met Gala. That was
oh,
a joke.
Okay. All right. Sorry.
Mentally.
I just want, yeah, mentally.
I am in a tuxedo. All right. We've got the pick six next. We're going to pick apart all the stories of the day. Mully and Haw on the score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Shota Imanaga was put on the 15-day IL as expected with a left hamstring strain. In a corresponding move, reliever Gavin Hollowell was promoted from Iowa. Does that make sense since Cade Horton pitched yesterday and Shota's spot is next Saturday at the Mets? Does Hollowell merely serve as a relief help until Saturday, or would you start Chris Flexen on the road and hold off at least a week with Horton?
Yeah, this is good stuff. This is what they're working through right now. This is what they're talking about and thinking about. I think it made perfect sense to bring up Hollowell. He still has some options. You can send him back down if you want to. You don't have to DFA anyone, and you get some bullpen help while you're waiting to figure out what you're going to do this weekend. And I think they got a pretty good feel for what they're going to do this weekend. I believe it's either start Chris Flexen and, you know, you're on the road and try to get him to eat some innings and then use the bullpen for that game. Or it's bring up Cade Horton and let's see what he's got. And I got a sense that maybe the manager would like to see the new starter, the young starter, and maybe the baseball boss would like to be patient and wait. He said something about it's still early,
mm-hmm.
meaning that they probably have a plan of how many games they're going to give to Horton. How many innings he can fill,
yeah.
and that would be later in the year. And that kind of makes sense to me, but I'll be very curious to see what they do. I think that they will they could start flexing, and just because Shota will be back in a few weeks, hopefully – but you're right, could leak longer. And if it gets to a month, then guess what? You're talking about a stint in Iowa, too. You're talking about finding yourself again before you come back. So hopefully it won't be that long, and hopefully they won't have to make any roster decisions and cut anybody.
Well, I think the current record and the way the offense is performing is going to allow the Cubs some flexibility, plus days off, I think, for the next 2 weeks on Thursdays also allows them to mix and match things just the way they would like. So this is it's okay for right now.
So I think you are onto something. I heard Craig Counsell leave the door a little more wide open, yep. to Cade Horton's promotion, maybe as early as this weekend. And I heard Jed Hoyer be very cautious and deliberate in addressing the same thing. That tells me they're probably going to be more deliberate in when they bring up Cade Horton and maybe go one more spin through the rotation perhaps with Chris Flexen to see what he has and if this consistency continues. It's been a nice surprise. when you get news on Shota Imanaga after the game and it's a mild hamstring strain, it's a sigh of relief because it doesn't require much more of a long-term type of recovery process. That said, you don't really know what kind of recovery process it will take because he's never been injured in this way before.
Mm-hmm.
It's May 6th. I think conservatively, you got to look at this as saying June 1st. And if you can look at June 1st as a return for Shota, that's still good news. You can endure the month of May without your best pitcher if you have ample and adequate replacements. And I think the Cubs do. Now, if they want to make that Cade Horton, I'd encourage that. I would applaud that. I think he should be ready. He's 23 years old. We're not talking about a 21-year-old who was just drafted and you're kind of rushing him through the system. He is coming back from a surgery and he wants to watch his innings, but I do think that it's not an outrageous expectation. If he were to come up, whether it's Saturday in New York or next week in Wrigley Field, I think he's ready for his debut. Now, the Cubs can differ on that, and they can wait on that, and it'll be perfectly fine because they can get by. They also have a four-game lead in this NL Central. I would look at this, though. Don't worry about winning the division. Make the best move that helps you stay in contention for going deep into the playoffs. And if that means resting Shota and taking your time with Cade Horton, okay, I can respect that.
I did not think you were going to close me out with that one. That's a great question.
What stood out to you about last night's game? Were you relieved to see Kyle Tucker playing and ready to go after a misstep in the ninth on Sunday afternoon? How about the Cubs going into the game with a 6-0 record in the series openers at Wrigley Field?
That tells me they love coming home. You heard it from Pat Hughes during the broadcast when he saw the ivy turning a shade of green that it looked like springtime was around the corner, and he heard the crowd and he said, boy, I love coming home. And the Cubs do too, and I think that record reflects that. What stood out about last night's game is it was a sigh of relief when Kyle Tucker, Bigfoot, was rounding the bases without any pain, and he looked fine in the field. So, yeah, that was nice. But what stood out to me was the guy that often gets overlooked but should not any longer, Carson Kelly, on a historic pace. The last Cub catcher to have 8 home runs in his through 20 games, Gabby Hartnett, 1925.
Wow.
This is a guy who's having a career year, a Chicago native born in Arlington Heights. This is the interview on Sunday morning with Matt Spiegel. He revealed that.
There you go.
Then I love the background. I love the way that he's such an affable guy, what he brings to that clubhouse. Craig Counsell talked about it. He's just an easy guy to be around. He's a positive influence, and he's got a sizzling hot bat.
Must have spent a lot of time at the track as a baby.
He was just a baby.
Nicky Lopez's glove, that stood out. And I also, before the game started, I thought it was interesting. I was playing lineup Easta, I guess by myself, at home, but we saw Pico Armstrong and Nico Horner flip. Now, both guys ended up getting 2 hits and each scored a run. PCA did strike out, but so it worked for one night. I wonder if that will continue.
I thought Matthew Boyd pitched really well. I know he made a mistake. I know they tied the game. The Cubs were up 2-0 on a 2-run homer, and then they tied the game the same way, and then the Cubs took over the game. But I was impressed by the way that he pitched. And I think we need to talk more about what Kelly talked about with sort of the transformation on the field. I really like that. The idea that when he puts on the tools of ignorance, he is now the catcher and he's going to catch. And when he takes them off, he's the hitter and he's going to rake. I thought that was super cool. And that's always kind of the battle. And you see that all the time. They're not getting a lot of offense out of Nicky Lopez, but they certainly got enough yesterday. He got a hit. He had a big walk, and it was good to see him. He's a very sure-handed fielder, and that problem, and it's a problem, the third base problem has quieted down because you got a guy that's going to man the position and make sure that plays get made, whether or not he's going to do anything at the plate. And like I said, he was good enough yesterday in both contributions to stand out. So congratulations to him, local guy, made good. We love seeing it.
And I know what your next question is, so go ahead.
What did you make of Shane Smith's performance for the White Sox last night in Kansas City? Do you believe he would be the White Sox All-Star representative if that decision was made today? Does Bobby Witt remain a major problem for any pitcher on the White Sox?
Boy, that guy is a nightmare. That guy, he just hits and steals bases, and there's very little you can do about it. And they manufactured a run, basically, thanks to him, and took a lead and ended up winning the game. I thought that Shane Smith has been very good for the White Sox. He's probably been their all-star player. If you have to have a player on the all-star team, who else would it be? It's, you know, they've had a couple contributions from rookies coming up, but that's not all-star performance level. But I think that Shane Smith at this point, again, you know, it's not like there's major competition around it, but thus far, he's been excellent, and he's been really good, and he was good again yesterday. Not quite good enough, but good.
Definitely keeps you in games, eats some innings, walks maybe a little higher than you would want. But, I mean, Bobby Witt's not just a nightmare for White Sox pitcher. He's a nightmare for everybody.
He's MVP caliber. He's not going to win the MVP with Aaron Judge in the American League and others who might be in front of him, but he's that kind of a player. And he's the kind of a player that, frankly, when you look at him, you at one point in time, remember when Colson Montgomery was drafted and you thought, oh, boy, the White Sox have their middle infielder to ascend quickly and make an impact, and that's not happening. So I guess that's a bad comparison, but he's easy to like and easy to watch. You know, Shane Smith has been a great example of why you should never give up on pitchers and why pitchers get so many chances, because something will click and they will find a pitch and they will perfect it or try to, and it will work for them. And in his case, it's the change up or the kick change or whatever they're calling it these days. But it is a variation of a change up and a pitch that is his out pitch, and he has used it successfully, and he's pitched with command and confidence. And he's not pitching on a very good team, but he's having very acceptable results. So I think he has been their best player. Who else would be in competition for that? Edgar Caro is a young player who just needs more at-bats, but he's going to emerge, if this continues, as one of their better players.
Unbelievable.
You know, Chase Mydroth is somebody who's easy to watch, and you see encouraging signs. I'm not saying these guys are at all-star caliber yet. That's not to be misunderstood, but there are signs of life among these young players that the Sox have identified as pieces that you know, they maybe can build with, not around necessarily. I don't know if either are cornerstones, but yeah, these are encouraging signs.
These are concerns and questions that people are asking.
Did it make you feel better about the Blackhawks learning that the Denver hockey coach signed a multi-year contract extension to stay in college rather than to take another NHL job? Any inkling on who's next?
Well, that was a relief. That was a relief, because if the Hawks had to deal with the headline, David Carl leaves Denver for Anaheim to coach the Ducks, or David Carl leaves Denver for whatever NHL team, there would be a lot of explaining to do. And as it is, it just feels like David Carl, like we've seen before with college coaches not wanting to jump to the professional leagues, just is very comfortable and content with his job and his compensation and his situation. So he's in his late 30s. This won't be the last time an NHL team makes an overture. It reminds me of Ben Johnson turning down the Washington Commanders interview to stay in Detroit to be the offensive coordinator. Sometimes quality of life is greater than the size of the contract or the size of the challenge in the case of the Blackhawks. So I think that was a relief to see that. Any inkling of who's next? Frank Saravalli gave us some good insight on Monday about who that might be. Jay Woodcroft is a guy who used to coach the Oilers as a possibility. Peter Laviolette, his name has come up at times. Rick Tocchet's name also has. But I think that he makes a good point. You wonder if the Hawks going to the retread route, retread coaches, and I don't mean that disrespectfully, but is a good fit for this team that hasn't done anything yet. You wonder if they want a younger coach, maybe not with experience, who they can grow with, but it's got to be the right guy under those circumstances. I'd like to see somebody with a little experience And on the younger side, Woodcroft sounds like he could be possible.
Yeah, I mean, David, you know way more about this than I would. I'm just surprised guys don't want to coach at the highest levels. They don't want to put that on their resumes. And listen, I don't walk in his shoes. I don't know if his wife wants to stay out in Denver. I'm sure Denver's a nice place to live. I've never been in the state of Colorado, at least that I know of. I'm maybe flown over it, but I've never been in it. I'm just surprised that you wouldn't want to take a job at the highest level, especially considering how many premier towns, original six teams have openings. I don't know this, David, maybe you do. Like, was he offered or did he interview with any of the other kind of big-time programs, franchises that have openings?
I think they had talked. I don't know if it was a formal interview. I do know the Hawks made a run at
him. For sure. But yeah. I was curious if anybody else had. Obviously, he worked it to his advantage. I'm sure he went up from the $700,000 that he was making to, I'm sure he's making well over $1 million now.
Colorado's beautiful. All the sunshine, too. Like 300 days of sunshine a year.
You get a Rocky Mountain high.
I don't know if I'd want to live there. I think it would be a cool place to. Once you get used to it, though, it'd be hard to leave. I could see that.
We had a vacation in Colorado one time. It was one of my favorites ever. It's this Marriott property that has since gone private. It's like a private house. They had a chef in this place. It was amazing. The kids got to go out and shoot arrows and stuff, trained. Watch, they weren't just shooting arrows at each other. But there was like a water facility. Yeah, I'm telling you, it was unbelievable. It was in the middle of nowhere. And as we were driving, we drove through Rifle, Colorado. I did not know there was a town called Rifle, but we drove right through it. So there you go. I would get the hell out of Colorado. I think I'd go kind of a little stir crazy after a while. I love it. I love the outdoors. You know, I'm a big man.
You scream outdoorsman.
I am a big man for thin air. I love it. When I can get up on a mountain and really struggle to breathe and kind of half pass out and have people needing to come and help me.
Glorious vacation memories,
sir,
right?
Sir, are you okay?
That was the first, I gotta go was for that a the walk. First date you ever had mouth performed on you?
I feel like I'm slightly taller than average, and that seems really hit me when I'm up at the high elevation. I hope they get – I wonder, David, why aren't they going after the best coaches that are available? There's a lot of guys. And why did they want a college coach? Are they going to duplicate this? Are they going for the Boston University guy? Are they going – you know, wouldn't you want the guy from Western Michigan after he just won a title and he came to that school and, you know, brought all those players with them? I don't know. I'd be very curious to see what they're thinking. I would love to know what the hell the NHL is thinking after watching that draft.
Yeah, no, it's a great question.
What was your response to the NHL draft lottery in which the Blackhawks will pick third? Do Monday's results have any bearing on how attractive the head coaching position is?
They were running some kind of shell game. I could not follow it.
Literally.
That draft.
What was that?
That was the weirdest, most. Oh. They didn't explain anything. They had the ESPN guy acting like he was a NASCAR driver, or a NASCAR announcer. Oh, my God. Oh, they're second. They're going to pick. It was insane. And then all the balls are coming up and the numbers are changing on the screen. I was literally watching this thing like, why are there no introductions? Why are they not explaining what the hell they're doing? It was so confusing. So they're sitting there, they're doing this, and then they finish, and it's like, the Utah Hockey Club is picking fourth, which meant we knew that the Blackhawks could pick no lower than fourth, so it meant they were third, but they left it blank, and they went to a commercial. And I said, yeah, the Hawks picked third.
There's no suspense.
Like, no, they don't.
There was no suspense.
They didn't even, and then you come back, and the whole board's filled out, and then they announce it, and then they go to hockey. I got to tell you. That was the weirdest. I've no. Someone needs to explain what they were doing. Well, what are you doing?
I unfortunately, the draft was like the draft lottery was on my radar. Then it wasn't on my radar, and then I was all in on the Cubs. And then I saw the response on social media about how fouled up to what you're talking about it was. So then I was upset with myself that I missed it because nobody likes to see a crash, more than me, and then have an opportunity in this segment.
You
to
should
talk
go
about
back.
It.
You would love it.
But what I didn't understand was yesterday, and we just didn't have time. We're busy, so I wanted to ask David this. So I'll have the opportunity now. Like, oh no, the Blackhawks don't want to pick first. Because they don't, then they'd have to take a defenseman that they don't need. I'm like, I was confused by that, so I almost felt like
Frank
it was like
Saravelli said
the
that
hockey
yesterday.
Gods were like, "All right, Blackhawks, you don't want to draft first, then fine. Now you're going to draft third." It was like, "Wait a minute, if you're in the position, don't you always want to draft first?"
But they're not going to get the centerman like Misa, right? So they'll probably get the third kid.
Well,
good kid.
The thing about not wanting to draft first, I didn't necessarily agree with that, but it was suggested because. If they did that, then they would not have been able to draft first next year, I believe.
Yes.
So they did not want to disqualify themselves from next year's generational talent, in quotes, who is much more considered to be a can't miss than this year's number one overall pick.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, now that makes that. Thank you.
They'll probably
that
be
that
in
makes
the
it
lottery.
A lot, that I didn't understand that if you took one this year, you were now. And let's hope. Like I think we could all agree on this. Let's hope they're not in a position.
Yeah, well, that's why I didn't like that conversation.
Three, right? That makes sense.
They should not be in next year's draft lottery. And Matthew Schaefer, this year's consensus number one overall pick, is a defenseman that the Hawks really don't need because they do have a good young stockpile of defensemen. So this is not a terrible result for the Hawks going third or second. Michael Misa. I think is one of those guys. James Hagans from Boston College is another. If they end up with one of those two players, they're going to be happy. And I think that's why there wasn't profound disappointment from the Hawks not getting that number one overall pick or even second, because third is not a bad position. I was at the Hawks draft party at the United Center or gathering because Danny Wirtz was there and the whole assembled Blackhawk personnel was there and the office staff. I can tell you that there was confusion in the room among many people as well. Maybe not people that were knowing what was going on, but I think here's what they were trying to do. They were trying to be transparent and having the balls come out of the machine and then coding them and seeing what that meant, rather than that's what they typically do behind the scenes.
Yes.
And then they put the names in an envelope and they open the envelope, they show everybody. But in seeking transparency, they created confusion.
Oh my God, stupidification.
Confusion.
It was, I'm telling you, it was
and then
stupefaction.
The performative Buchigross was doing on stage, it was really kind of ridiculous.
It was so dumb, the whole damn thing.
Oh, I was standing next to Pat Boyle, and I was like, what what just happened? Am I just the only one not getting it here?
I'm watching this thing. They didn't interview anybody. They all of a sudden, the top three players pop up. They introduce them. They didn't really talk to them. Then you go and you see everyone. I'm like, oh, there's Kyle Davidson. He never said a word. They interviewed the guy from the Islanders because they got the first
pick. The Islanders got the first pick. They went from 10th to first, and they had a 3.5% chance of getting the number one overall pick. So I guess the takeaway in Chicago is
Bulls. And did you see who's their draft guy?
Matas.
Matas will be sitting
lucky.
There.
Matas.
There you go.
Different question on a different topic.
The Bears host rookie minicamp later this week. What Bears rookie are you most curious to see on the grass, as they like to say?
I'm very curious about Luther Burden III.
Yeah.
I want to see the burst. I want to see in and out of breaks. I want to see the fluidity. I want to see all the things that made him,
speed,
in some people's eyes, one of the top 15 players on a draft board. And there are some draft analysts and evaluators that said that was the best pick among all draft picks just because of the value. But so he's at the top of the list, but not far behind for me, I think, out of curiosity. Kyle Manungai is somebody. How tall is he? How quick is he? How fluid is he? And all the things that you see and you think you know what an NFL running back looks like and how he operates. So if he looks the part, you start to wonder. And I do wonder this. I mean, the Bears still are a running back shy of having a running game that they feel good about. No disrespect to Roschon Johnson, but we can talk about their offseason all we want and congratulate them. But to me, they're still one player away from finishing the job.
I going to be a lockstep, Luther Burden III, but I also want to bring up body language. That was something that some people weren't happy about. I want to see how people also weren't happy with his initial couple of answers when he jumped on with the media. Didn't sound super enthused, so I'd like to see if there's a little bounce in his step on the grass at Halas Hall.
Yeah, that's the kind of guy who'd be a star of that kind of minicamp because of speed. He should be moving at a different level than other guys. And, you know, minicamp's nothing. They bring him in. Here's the building. Here, get a hotel room for now. But if you make the team, move into this area. There's a bunch of guys. Stay in here. You'll have a lot of fun with them. I mean, that's all it is. It's just, here's where we practice. Here's what we do. There's the building. There's your locker room. Here's the main locker room. And we got a weight room and blah, blah, blah. That's what it is. Tour the building, have a sandwich, and you can live close to this place. Chicago? Oh, that's way the hell downtown. Yeah.
Chicago? Yeah.
Good luck with
Oh, you thought you were drafted
that.
By the Chicago
yeah, exactly.
Bears.
Exactly.
You were drafted by the Lake Forest Bears.
Yeah. Maybe we'll take the crew of you in a van.
Did we tell you
downtown
we're going to play
for an hour?
And eventually we're going to play at Arlington Heights.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. But you know, that Kyle Manunga is another guy who it's like there are these like guys that show up at training camp that you look at them and you're like, wow, that guy's quick. Look, that's pretty good stuff. And then the players all show up and you're like, whatever happened to that little guy? Where'd he go? Like, they just disappear in the crowd.
Yeah.
Now, he's not going to do that, I hope. But it's going to be fun to just see everyone get acclimated and get a chance to hear what they have to say.
Who's the camp arm?
I don't know. That's a good question. Who did they sign? They've got.
I don't think they have a quarterback. They signed as an undrafted free agent, did they?
So then
they got to have a camp arm.
They're going to have the kid that behind Caleb. Remember the where was their third quarterback from last year? He'll probably be the camp arm, right?
Who would that be?
Remember the Austin Reed.
Oh yeah, Austin Reed. Yeah. Good old Austin Reed. See, it's a Hard Knocks co-star.
That's right.
Yeah.
He was on the team last year. He was on the practice.
That's right. He's a guy.
He's floating around the building.
He's floating around yeah. with Bajent. Bajent, he gets some reps.
I don't know that they. I don't know if that's beneath him or not. He's now
wow.
the third quarterback, right? They
he's
probably
a
need
quarterback.
Two arms.
He's a second quarterback.
Oh, he's still the second quarterback.
He's a second quarterback.
Didn't they sign a quarterback?
He's the second quarterback.
Didn't they sign a veteran?
He's the backup. Case Keenum is the third quarterback.
Case Keenum. He's not going to show up for this.
No, he's not. And he's a veteran. But I don't think.
Would it be great if Caleb showed up? He's probably
yeah, it would be.
Egypt or something.
He's at the Met Gala.
Yeah. Oh, he definitely belongs at the Met Gala. No question.
Don't say the Met Gala.
Don't mention it. We'll get exhausted. No. All right. We've got the extra point. The extra point is next. It's Mully and Haw on the score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
After hearing Jed Hoyer and seeing the Cubs use six third basemen and need even more starting pitchers moving forward, how would you prioritize this team's needs, and do you consider it a legit playoff threat?
Well, I do consider the Cubs a legit playoff threat, and it cannot be just enough to say, well, they're leading the division by four games, and they're better than the Reds and the Brewers and everybody else. If you're the Cubs this year with this team, and on May 6th you lead the majors in run differential with plus 69, and you're 22-14, you better think bigger than just the NL Central. I know it's been a while since you've been in the playoffs, but if you are looking at this big picture, you've got to start to consider, if you haven't already, and they likely have, that this is a team that can win the pennant. That's what you got to think. Because right now, you are in the company of the Dodgers and the Mets. And the Padres are probably up there as well. If you're talking about the best four teams in the National League so far this season, those are the top four. And the Cubs and the Mets this weekend are going to be outstanding. I'm looking forward to tonight. Justin Verlander. I know he's winless, Justin Verlander. But he's still Justin Verlander at Wrigley Field. That's a moment. That's a big deal. Colin Ray. How about Colin Ray? Last two times out, Paul Skeens last week, Justin Verlander yeah. tonight. And he's going to probably be the best pitcher on the mound tonight. That's the way you got to approach it. He's going to be the best pitcher in the game tonight. And he's going to outpitch Verlander the way he outpitched Skeens. And if you're the Cubs, you got to go into every game, and you do, with that kind of confidence. They're getting career years out of Carson Kelly. That Dansby Swanson is hot.
Yeah, right now.
You got PCA emerging as a star. You've got one of the best players in the game in Kyle Tucker. You have every reason to believe that the front office can be aggressive and go for it now, because now is the future. And so you need a starting pitcher. You're going to need a bullpen arm, and you're going to need a third baseman. And however, if you get two out of three, great. If you get one out of three, eh. If you swing and miss in all three, you may not be able to take advantage of what could be a special season.
So I think they're a legit playoff team. A threat, I think, is the key word to the question based on where they're at today, even though they're in a nice spot record-wise, nice spot in the division. I mean, you may not see your top two pitchers back until 2026. And when you get to playoff baseball, you have to have aces. You also have to have a guy at the back end of the bullpen. And at this minute, there's nobody in that, some people like to call it, the circle of trust. I don't trust anybody in a high-leverage postseason game to shut another team down with a one-run lead in this bullpen today.
Yeah, I mean, we can rattle off their problems all day, and we do a pretty good job of it every day. I wouldn't argue about, they've already gone through six third baseman. What is the date? It's May 6th. Think about that. They've already gone through six. They went through seven last year.
Six-man rotation.
It's crazy. It is. It's crazy. I think that the bullpen, we have lamented. It's a great question that Dustin asked. When you get to the end of the season, can you survive with this bullpen? I think they need help. I think they probably need another arm. I don't know if that can come in internally. But the fact of the matter is, and again, we're not looking at standings. It's too early in the season. But they've played the toughest schedule. They're in a division where they are the only team with a winning record. Right now, the Brewers and the Reds are 500. That's it. So I don't see them getting hot, getting better. I think the Cubs are the best team in the division. I think the Cubs are a playoff team. I think it's just about maintaining that. And then you got to look at those positions and see how you get better.
Yeah.
How are you going to get better? You should. You can get better. Get better.
They just have to ride the wave of the kid with the blue hair and the Bigfoot.
Big hair.
Bigfoot and blue hair.
Big foot. Big feet. Big hair, huge feet, big blue hair, and Doughboy.
That got a lot of play yesterday before the game.
They did.
That got a lot of play. Pat Murphy and his description of the Cubs' two best players.
It was so perfectly encapsulating, dismissive, but also respectful. It was like the perfect slap across the face.
Can you be dismissively respectful?
Yeah, he did it.
He did kind
of strike. He pulled it off.
Yeah.
It was the back of his hand applied swiftly to the side of their face, but in a way that made it seem like a love tap.
Yeah, because I think he referenced PCA being a special player several times. So
yes.
It wasn't trying to keep a young player who's brash in his place.
Suggested he could probably pitch, too, because he can do everything. And the guy with the big feet, what a hitter. What a hitter.
That's good to see Kyle Tucker getting back in a bit of a groove over the weekend. That was good to see.
It's good to see like a little bit of a rivalry
tonight? Yeah,
emerging too.
Yeah, I like with the Brewers.
Especially
definitely.
Since the Cubs are the better team of the two.
Well, especially since the Cubs pried their manager away and the Brewers were better last year. So that kind of spices it up. Isn't it tonight going to be cool just with Verlander? Because you don't know how many more glimpses you're going to get of the guy.
Yes, I think. But I also, he doesn't send the shock of fear through you that he once did.
No, but you worry about those.
No, you got to do your
capturing
business.
That one they, more.
You know, here's the thing.
Lightning in the bottle for 6 2/3.
That's what they need. They need to just get that done. Get that done. Get your run scored. Let them bobble the ball, whatever it might be. Get that second game. Make sure you win the series tonight. And then you go in with no pressure And then you can.
Giants were shaky.
You can surrender that. The Giants were awful. They were bad.
Sloppy.
Flat out bad.
Jet lag.
Probably jet lag.
And a little chilly.
Tell Dustin. They went across the country.
Well, they did look like they were lacking concentration and focus. They looked like there was something wrong with them. It was definitely San Francisco-like weather.
It was weird.
A little chilly.
They were bad.
There was a chill in the air.
All right. 312-644-6767. They're a playoff team, right? What could possibly go wrong?
I don't know. In that division? They might not be.
Well, how who's going to catch them?
Oh, goodness. The Giants?
Beat them? No, no. I'm talking about the Cubs.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
No question.
Yeah, no doubt about that.
312-644-6767. It's Mully and Hall on the Score.
Cubs are going to be 22-14. The Giants are going to have that exact same record after this game. Ripped on the ground to short, scooped up by Swanson, throws to first. Cubs win. The Cubs win the ball game. 9-2 the final. Cubs take game one in the three-game series.
We took advantage of some mistakes tonight, but we also put some pressure on them, I thought, with base running, some base running moments, and then just kept kind of moving the line and ended up with a big number on the board.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That is the voice of Craig Counsell. He, of course, the manager of the Chicago Cubs, and they are doing very well for themselves. It is a very fun team to watch. Pete Crow Armstrong gets on base, and you know he's going to steal a base. It gets in the head of the pitcher. They're trying to prevent it. It's an extraordinary thing to watch.
When he got thrown out on Sunday, you're like, no, that can't be right.
That was wrong.
You need to replay that. Yeah. You need to review that. Yeah. That can't be true. But William Contreras has the highest percentage of thrown out runners, I think, in Major League Baseball. So that's going to happen.
Right.
But you're right. His speed is a nuisance to opponents, and it's a weapon for the Cubs, and it's fun to watch. It helps when the Giants commit four errors.
Boy, that was ridiculous.
It really was. But
and how many? Were there two or three in the one inning? They also walked three guys? I mean, this team is too good to just give people outs.
It was one of those nights for the Giants. It was just one of those nights. You don't see typically Chapman and Adames commit those kind of mistakes.
Chapman comes in on a bunt, and you know, the guy is like as good as you get. And he kind of fumbles the thing, and PCA goes back to third. It was just bizarre.
You know, you talk about PCA, but you forget sometimes, not you necessarily, but it's easy to overlook. Nico Horner, he stole a base last night.
Nico Horner was real
good. He's an excellent base runner. The Cubs just have really smart, versatile baseball players.
They're all playing at a high level right now.
They're
a very good team.
And it's amazing how much different this lineup feels and looks when Dansby Swanson hits.
I agree.
Because we have gotten so used to, almost numbed into the idea that he's just going to be this good glove, no-hit shortstop.
Yes.
But when he can hit, then that lengthens the lineup, and you're reminded that, boy, he can come through in the clutch, and that's good to see because he can be a vital cog in this machine. And it's somebody who defensively you always count on, but offensively he's been far too absent. So he's getting going. Carson Kelly, you could not have anticipated this. Unbelievable.
Somebody texts in, you say you're not looking at the standings, and you've already mentioned the Cubs are leading the division by four games multiple times. Wants to know who you're crapping.
Well, it's okay to look at the standings.
I'm not really looking at the standings. I am, you know, the Brewers were just here. And I knew they were under 500, and I knew they were hovering around 500.
But I think, okay, that's kind of nitpicking. Here's what I think is consistent with, hopefully, the way we're approaching this.
Yeah.
We're evaluating the Cubs not by their ability to win the division.
No, we're evaluating by the ability to compete in Major League Baseball.
Yes.
Frankly, with the hardest schedule in the league, they have done that throughout the course of this season.
No doubt about it. And the standard, though, is going to be this year when you have maybe only one season of Kyle Tucker, when you have the emergence of PCA as a star, you have an opportunity in Chicago, I think, in a big market city, an obligation to treat this like a World Series opportunity.
Right.
Win the pennant. Be good enough to win the pennant. Be good enough to beat the Dodgers. So when we're evaluating and holding Jed Hoyer accountable or Craig Counsell accountable for lineups and Jed Hoyer for moves, it's by that standard we're holding them. They need to think that way because they're good enough to do that this year. And I think that's what we're seeing through the first month or month and a half of the season, is that this Cub team could be onto something special this year. So take advantage.
Is the third baseman eventually going to be Matt Shaw?
It's a great question. It's something that they talked about yesterday. We should get into that when we come back, because that to me speaks to this larger issue.
Yeah.
Is that if you, depending on your answer, it might depend on how you're viewing this season.
312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the score.